Such glorification is relished by those no longer interested in the false, temporary glorification of this cosmic manifestation. Descriptions of the Lord are the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. Therefore, who will cease hearing such glorification of the Lord except a butcher or one who is killing his own self? So the verse begins with the words Nibritta Tarshaya. Nibritta Tarshaya means those who are liberated, like Prahlad Maharaj, who have no attraction, attachment to this material world. So when they chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, when they glorify Krishna, then all of their satisfaction is coming from that, because they're liberated, so they instantly realize that the Lord and His holy name are not different. When we chant Hare Krishna, the liberated soul realizes that this is Krishna, Ananda Maya Purush, that personality who is flooding our consciousness with transcendental happiness. And for those who are not Nivritta Tarsaya, for those who are not liberated, for those who are still attracted by material sense gratification, then Bhavausadach Shrota Mano Biramat, then the chanting of Hare Krishna is like medicine for them. So this will cure our material obsessions, you see, our attachment to the material nature, if we chant Hare Krishna. And as the cure takes effect, then we will also taste that same transcendental pleasure that is relished by the pure devotees. Then Puman Virajeta Vina Pashugnat. Those who are Pashugnat means killer of the soul. Pashu can mean soul, or Pashu can mean an animal, other living entities. So in other words, those who are very much addicted to killing themselves by remaining always in these very sinful activities, like meat eating, animal killing, like that, then they will not be able to take advantage of this process. So this is a warning, these very dire, severe, sinful habits. We have to become reformed of them. We have to give them up, and then we can make progress in chanting the holy name. So I think I've covered that. And now we want to that was the discussion of the background of the transformation of consciousness. It really comes down to a question of taste. You see, either we have taste for Krishna consciousness, for hearing and chanting about Krishna, or we'll have taste, corresponding taste for hearing and chanting about material affairs, for enjoying material sense objects, for becoming devotees of materialistic leaders, important people, VIPs, you see? So that's the background. Then I want to just mention about this steps of transformation of consciousness and how they correspond to stages of creation. I'm not going to spend a lot of time with this, but I think it's important to know. So you may know from reading Prabhupada's books that there's Chaturvyuha. There's a fourfold manifestation of Lord Vishnu, which is, these are his expansions or manifestations for the purpose of creation. The whole creation of the universe can be understood in terms of these four. So there's Vasudev, or Narayan, Mahanarayan of the spiritual world. Then there's Sankarsana or Mahavishnu. Here we have a very nice deity of Mahavishnu there. You see all the universes. So he is the initial source of the material creation. The universe is streaming out of his pores. Then Garbhodakashayi Vishnu, who is also in the chapter of Yuha, Pradumya. Pradumya, Garbhodakashayi Vishnu enters. I think you'll see this. Yes, you can see. Inside of this one universal globe, there is a Vishnu laying at the bottom on Anantashesht. He is Garbhodakashayi Vishnu, the third expansion. And then Aniruddha or Paramatma, who enters into the heart of every living being. This is the fourth of the Chaturvyuha. So along with this Leela of the Lord in expanding in these four ways, there are stages of creation and stages of conditioning of consciousness. So at the Brahman stage, which is the stage of Vasudev, so consciousness is known as Turiya, above the three modes of nature. Turiya in Sanskrit means the fourth stage. So there are three modes of nature, Tamoguna, ignorance at the bottom, Rajoguna, passion in the middle, Sattvaguna, goodness at top, and then above that, the fourth stage, Turiya, transcendental. And so this is the Vasudev manifestation of consciousness. And we know this from Srila Prabhupada as pure goodness. It is goodness, it is sattva, but without any touch of the Rajoguna, Tamoguna. Material goodness has this touch. Material goodness, if you want to know, I sometimes give this example. There's a joke, it's kind of an off-color joke, a little bit of a, just very slightly not nice joke, not too much. So the father has learned that his teenage daughter, he's heard some whispering that she's pregnant, and of course she's not married. So he's very concerned and he asks her, "Are you pregnant? This is what I'm hearing." And she gets all red in the face and looks down, "Only a little bit, Daddy." So, so if one is a little bit pregnant, you know, that means just wait and the condition will become very obvious in a few months. You see, now she looks slim, just like a young girl, but given time, her condition will become known to everyone. So the material mode of goodness is like that. It's a little bit pregnant with Rajoguna, Tamoguna. And if one is in the material mode of goodness, that means in time, given time, the effect of these lower modes will also become obvious. You see? So the sattva, the Shuddha Sattva Guna, Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness, or Vasudev Sattva, is not impregnated with the lower modes. It is uncontaminated. So this is called Turiya, pure consciousness above the three gunas. And this is the stage of Brahmabhuta. I was speaking about that last night in Om Vikskord. The living entity is established in Brahman, you see, in his pure spiritual form and nature. So then the next stage, from Brahman to Ishwara, Ishwara is referring to Mahavishnu. So at this stage manifests something called Pragya, or intelligence but in avyakta, unmanifest intelligence or unconsciousness. And we all experience this. When we sleep at night, we enter into a stage called deep sleep. There's no dream, there's no awareness. Except that we're aware later when we wake up that we have enjoyed that rest. So there's some happiness in this state. So that's actually what we experience at night, that called susupti also, susupti. That state of deep sleep, unawareness, is actually the first stage of consciousness in the unfolding of creation as a whole. That means all living entities who end up in this material world in different bodies, they're initially in that state, a deep sleep within Mahavishnu. And this is called Pragya. It's called, there's intelligence there, but it's in avyakta. Avyakta means non-manifestation. So the intelligence indicates that desire is already there. There's already desire. There's already the capacity to go after material objects of pleasure, but it is submerged in unconsciousness at this state. Also, another example is given of a baby in the womb of the mother. Before the baby becomes, it's still, I don't know what they call, what stage, embryo, whatever. The body is not yet developed. It's just a lump inside of the mother's womb. So, potentiality of personality, of activity is there, but not manifest yet. And this root consciousness submerged in ignorance, because this is this state of we're speaking of Ishwara state of creation, Mahavishnu. The predominant mode is ignorance. Ignorance is the background of the material creation. Everything starts in ignorance. So the consciousness submerged in ignorance, this is the Karana Sharira or Karana Deha, the causal body. And I hope to speak of this more in a little later in tonight's session. I was referring in the other seminars here to the subconscious. This is the subconscious. It's called the Karana Sharira, the causal body. So you know about the subtle body, mind, intelligence, false ego. Of course you know about the gross body, but the background of that is called Karana Sharira. It is a subconsciousness. It is submerged in ignorance and is where all of our desires are, and the desires come out from that into the mind, into our surface mind, our awareness. And this stage of creation is called Mahat. Then the third stage, Hiranyagarbha or Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, this is called Taijasa, creative intelligence. Now the intelligence comes out of this ignorance, and so this is Svapna, the dreaming state. The desires come out on a subtle level, and this is a whole stage of creation. It means there's a phase of creation which the whole universe is in this dream state, and the activities of the living entities are manifest only in terms of thought, the subtle level. And so it's at this stage that the subtle body, Linga Sharira, comes into being. And this stage of creation is called Taijasa. This is indicating the mode of passion. Here the mode of passion becomes prominent. And then the fourth stage, Virat. Here the false ego becomes established, connecting the soul to a gross body, a physical body, or Stula Sharira. And we experience at this stage Jagrata, wakefulness in the body. You see? We're passing from first transcendental state, Turiya, into deep sleep without dream, then dreaming sleep, and then wakefulness. But this wakefulness, we need to understand this, what we're all experiencing right now, hopefully everyone here is awake right now, as I'll be explaining further shortly. This is only a small portion of our total capacity for consciousness. Most of our total capacity for consciousness, which is our actual self, the soul, is submerged in ignorance. And this ignorance is always there. Therefore, in psychology, they talk about the subconscious or unconscious as being a constant factor. It's not that now I'm awake, so there's no subconsciousness, no unconsciousness. The unconsciousness is still there. It's underneath. And it manifests. We can notice it through associations. Sometimes there's these strange mental associations. I told you the other day, déjà vu. This is a major topic in psychology, that people have a mysterious sensation. They're somewhere and they think, I've been here before. But in their physical existence in this life, they never were there before. But there's some familiarity with it. They don't know where it, so this is coming from the unconscious or subconscious. There's some association from something deep inside coming out. So that means the subconscious or unconscious is always there. You see? So our conscious, the play of our conscious mind, is only the tip of the iceberg. This is important to understand when we consider the workings of the mind. So, yes. So we leave that and go onward. As I say, we have a lot of information to cover, and I hope that it doesn't sound too technical. So now, yes, I want to discuss what's going on inside the heart. There's Paramatma, the super soul is there in the heart, and his energy in the form of kala or time. Time is an energy, the energy of God. It is, Prabhupada says, it is the impersonal feature of God, his impersonal or Brahman feature, and that is energizing this entire universe. You see, we look at the night sky and you can see the heavens above, they're turning like a great clock. So, and actually, time is calculated by this turning of the heavenly bodies at night. In India and other ancient societies, Babylonia, even in South America, the Mayan civilization, they made calendars of vast stretches of time by observing the turning of the zodiac and of the planets and stars. So it is a vast clock. So any clock we know, you see, the old-fashioned wind-up clock, you wind it, that's where the energy comes from. Now more modern clocks, you have a battery, but there must be a source of energy to make the clock tick or whatever it does. Digital clocks don't tick, but anyway, in order for them to keep time, there has to be a source of energy. So this universe, there must be a source of energy. We see this revolution of the great astral clock above our heads. What is the source of energy of that? That is time, kala. Time is that energy which is powering everything that's happening in this universe. And the Vedic scriptures explain that we talk of the three modes of nature. So the three modes of nature constitute everything, all experience. And the three modes of nature can also be understood as the passage of time. You see? That past time, time that is already gone, representing the tamoguna, the mode of ignorance. You see what happens when you think about the past? You get nostalgic, right? You get sentimental. You get, you see? And this is this kind of depressed thinking about the way it used to be. Oh, it was so nice when I was a child, and now those days are gone. This is tamasic. This depressed state is indicative of the mode of ignorance. Then present time, the time that is with us, which is of course very mysterious because you can never seize that moment. The nature of our psychophysical organism, as soon as we talk about now, it is already past. As soon as I say now, the very uttering of that word now means that that now that I'm talking about is already gone. We're actually always a little bit in the past trying to acquire the present, and just not quite. You never get it. But the present, that is sattva guna, the now. So that is that is the reality. This is what is real, is what's happening right now, in this instant. And future time, what is that? Rajoguna, mode of passion. When people think about the future, they start making plans, you see? Rajasic consciousness becomes prominent. You think about the future. Yes, I'm going to get a raise in my job, or I'm going to, you know, do this or that, go on vacation in Greece next summer, whatever, blah blah, this Christmas I'm going to do this or that. Plan making, Rajoguna. So these three modes of material nature, they're turning all the time, and that is powered by time. So time is the background energy of everything in this material world. So Paramatma is in the heart with his time energy. And the Atma, the soul, is also there. And the soul has his, what is called Svabhava, which means nature, which is comprised of past impressions. What we are now is a product of what we have done. This is the idea of the law of karma. Whatever we are now, it is a product of what we have done in the past. and what we have done that leaves in the consciousness impressions, sangskaras. And this is a form of conditioning of consciousness. And the karma that we have done before, that's a force. There's a force of previous actions, and you can see this yourself in your own life. When we develop habits, you see? Like, particularly, in modern life, people have so many bad habits. So the habit to smoke, for example, take that as an example. So we develop this habit, and then it gains a life of its own, a force of its own in our life. You see? We smoke, and we feel ourselves in time becoming short of breath and coughing a lot, and we think, this is not very healthy, I should stop, but then it's very difficult to stop it. Because that karma, that activity that we have been cultivating, it has its own force, and it impels us. You know, so people go through all this anxiety, giving up smoking, nicotine patches, all these things they have to do to overcome that force. And some people aren't, they can't do it. They don't have the willpower to do it. I read about a man who had three heart operations, and his heart had become bad because of his excessive smoking, 4 packs of cigarettes a day. So they cut him open 3 times over a period of some years, and were taking veins out of his leg and, you know, ripping out the old veins in the heart that were all clogged and useless, and putting in veins from his leg, sewing it into the heart so his heart would keep working. And a reporter went to see him. This was after the 3rd operation. He's laying in the bed, fresh scar, third scar on top of 2 other scars. And the reporter found him smoking. And the reporter said, I've talked to your doctor. The doctor says you're in this condition because you're smoking. And he said, I just like it too much. I can't give it up. So they smoked themselves into the grave, you see. They can't overcome the force of their karma. So this is there with the jiva. His svabhava, his acquired nature from past activities and the force of his karma. And then the Lord, Vishnu, he enters into the creation and the jiva comes with him. So creation, mahatattva, altogether it's called the mahatattva. The creative principle, and prominent in the mahatattva is the ahamkara, false ego. So the Lord is always transcendental to this, just like Paramatma in our heart. He is transcendental to this body. He's not identifying with this body. But the soul who's under the influence of karma and svabhava, he becomes entangled in ahamkara, which then means that his life energy becomes divided into 3 directions. Jnana Shakti, the power or shakti of knowledge. Kriya Shakti, the power of activity, physical activity. Dravya Shakti, the power of the material elements that we want to enjoy. And this is manifesting as 3 kinds of ahamkara, 3 kinds of false ego, which means again 3 modes of material nature. Vaikaraka ahamkara, which is in the sattva guna. From this arises the mind. The mind arises from the sattva guna, and along with the mind are the attendants of the mind in the form of demigods who are in charge of the senses. These demigods actually reside in this body. So the deity of the mind is Chandra, the moon god. And these other demigods, Dik, Vayu, Surya, Varuna, Ashwini Kumars, Agni, Indra, Upendra, Prajapati, Mitra. So they're controlling the actions of the ear, the skin, the feeling of the skin, the eye, the tongue, the nose, sensation of smell, and then the active senses, the voice, the hands, the feet, the genitalia for reproduction, the anus for elimination of waste products. So these devatas assemble around the mind and they control the functions of the body. This is on the subtle mental platform, mode of goodness. Then on the Taijasa Ahamkara, Rajoguna, then the senses themselves, I've just mentioned them, the organic senses themselves are manifest, that which are controlled by these demigods. And then on the Tamasa Ahamkara, then this is the growth stage, the physically manifest body, with its which is manifest out of the Panchatanmatras, the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. So this is the actual conditioning of consciousness. It happens to us individually, and it happens on a cosmic scale. The whole universe manifests the same levels of conditioning. And the Vedic literature interestingly reveals these stages at different cosmic levels. For instance, now we on this earth, in this gross embodiment, physical embodiment in this body, this is the Bhur Loka level. The predominant element is Bhumi, or earth. This body is made out of earth, and of course water and fire. These other elements are there. But what is prominent, as we see, is it's earthy, it's solid. Earth means solid matter. And so at this earthy state of consciousness, what is prominent is anamaya, the need to eat, to feed this body. We have to eat solid food in order that this body be maintained, as well as pranamaya, the life energy, more subtle life energy, manomaya, the workings of the mind, vijnanamaya, workings of intelligence. But down in this bhurloka level, we are physically embodied. But then there's a higher level, according to the Vedic scheme of the universe, this is the level of the moon and other nearer heavenly planets, Bhuvar Loka. And there the predominant element is water. And living entities are not anymore physically embodied. They have bodies, but they're more subtle. Their bodies are more like mental bodies. And this is also true. There's above Bhuvar Loka, Svarga Loka, the heaven that many scriptures speak of. This is also in that subtle realm. Mahar Loka is also in the subtle realm. And then above that, there are the regions called Jana Loka, Tapa Loka, Satya Loka. And this is in the realm of Vayu and Akash, air and ether. And there, the embodiment is this Karana Deha. So the mind is not active, and the physical body is no longer seen to be active at this level. Because in Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka, this is the residence of great, great sages who are absorbed in the trance of yoga. So their minds are fixed. Their minds are not wavering, moving here and there. Minds are fixed in samadhi, and their bodies, if they have bodies, and their bodies are also fixed in meditation, not active, and they're absorbed in trance. So in the greater scheme of the universe, all these different stages of consciousness are manifest, and they are manifest here too in our body. This body is a small sample of the universe. Chudra Brahmanda in Vedic literature. It's a tiny universe. And so a human being, by practice of yoga, can also enter into these other states that I've just mentioned. He can shift his consciousness from the gross into the more subtle and stay there, or even can go into this Karana Deha stage, a stage of total trance. Some yogis still are doing that in India. They spend years together in meditation, and because they remain fixed like this, therefore they age and much slower than normal people do. I've seen a photograph of a yogi He has passed on recently, but he was over 200 years of age. He used to come sometimes to Vrindavan with his disciples. So he was well over some 230, 250 years old. And so he spent most of his time in trance, just sitting in meditation. And only sometimes would come out and associate with his disciples. So that is there. I wanted to mention this. And moving on. Yes, now I want to conclude by presenting you, by bringing it all together, and because this information I've told you is rather, I don't know, philosophical and sort of cosmic, and we still may be having a little trouble to understand how it relates to me in my present state. So that's what we're going to come to now, a practical psychology. So I want you to think of a triangle and think of the corners, the three corners of a triangle. So in the middle, at the top, there are the emotions. And the emotions dwell within the mind. Actually, the emotions are coming out of the subconscious part of the mind into the conscious mind. And because Prabhupada writes that psychology basically means thinking, feeling, willing. So when we talk of this middle point of the triangle, the upper point, this is the feeling. And this feeling is above the other two. So in fact, human psychology is ruled by feelings. Feelings are the most prominent and the most powerful manifestation of our psychology. Then the other points of the triangle, on this side there is the thinking. And the opposite side, willing or action. And there, in modern psychology, they have corresponding, the same idea. They have different terms. Cognitive for thinking, affective for emotions, and conative for action. We say thinking, feeling, willing. Or jñāta, bhokta, and what is the third? Karya, yeah, karta. Jñāta, bhokta, karta. So, yes, jñāta, thinking, bhokta, feeling or enjoying, and karta, to act. And this is originating, these are, actually I've already discussed this, false ego in three manifestations. Three kinds of false ego. So this is how they manifest. Thinking, feeling, and willing. And this is provided for us by the Paramatma. He is giving us these powers. These are the Jnana Shakti, the thinking power, the feeling power, the willing power. This is given to us from within by Paramatma. So as I said, predominant is emotions. So I want you to maintain this idea of a triangle. This is our beginning look at practical psychology. So now let us move over to this side, the thinking side. We'll begin to explain what that is all about. So the mind, in this thinking phase, it does basically two things. It observes, which is called anubhava, and it remembers, smriti. And these powers are, again, given by Paramatma. Krishna explains that in Bhagavad Gita. Matak smittim gyanam apohanam cha. Knowledge means to observe, and remembrance, and also forgetfulness, which is the absence of remembrance. This is all coming from me. So in thinking, we observe, we notice things, and we remember them. We call up from our memory different experiences. And observation, this observing, that is also twofold. There are two aspects of that. One is to observe by pratyaksha through the senses, to observe, like to see something through the eyes, watch something. But also you observe by logic, tarka. You see, this is the more logical function of the mind. You also observe that way. For example, you're sitting at home in your room, the door is closed, and you hear a knock at the door, and a voice of a person, a friend, someone you know, speaks through the door. So you don't see him with your eyes, but you see him in your mind. Tarka, logic, impels you to accept that he's on the other side of the door. He might not be. It might be someone else with a tape recorder of your friend's voice, and he's trying to trick you. He's knocked on the door and he plays the tape. So we can be fooled by this. But we do observe by logic. Modern science is very much works on this. So many things are not seen directly, but seen through the eyes of logic. And therefore all these scientific theories are there. Yes, so we see through pratyaksha, the senses, and through anuman or inference is done by tarka or logic. And there is yet another faculty that comes into this thinking of the mind, and this is known as intuition. Acharyas, like Ramanujacharya, calls this intuition divya pratyaksha, divine perception. Madhvacharya calls it sakshi, the witness, the inner witness, as if there's another witness, because intuition is actually coming to us from Paramatma. Now at our present stage, intuition is rather muddy. It's not so clear. Sometimes, you know, our intuition isn't working very well. Sometimes it's working wrong. But everyone knows this intuition. It's in English we call it the sixth sense. You see, you can have you meet someone, you don't know this person, you have no reason to think any ill of him, but there's something about him. You can't really put your finger on him. There's something about this person. You feel, I can't trust him. You have to watch this guy. He's up to something. You don't know why. You can't really say clearly that he did something to make you suspicious, but just something about his aura makes you a little nervous. This is intuition. So intuition is actually, according to Ramanujacharya, great Vaishnavacharya, this is what we develop in Krishna consciousness. It is divya pratyaksha. It is divine perception. Ultimately, to see Krishna, to see his spiritual form, there must be divya pratyaksha. Without any covering at all, it becomes totally manifest. So this bhakti yoga process is the cultivation of divya pratyaksha, this the refining of the intuition, which is the gift of knowledge, internal knowledge given by Paramatma. So that is also there in our thoughts. And yes, smriti. We want to talk a little bit about memory. Memory is something that scientists actually do not understand it at all. They don't understand. They try to map the brain. They try to say memories are in the brain, but it doesn't work. Memories are most mysterious thing. Actually, again, it's coming from Paramatma. And you know, our whole sense of who we are is based on our memory. Our life makes sense because we have memory. You see, like all of you live somewhere. When you leave here tonight, you'll go somewhere. You know that place, where that place is. You don't need to go out on the street and ask, could you tell me where such and such street is? Because you know where it is because of your memory. This is so essential to our identity. So, what happens when we dream at night? When we dream at night, then this pratyaksha, this sense perception, shuts down. In daytime, we are seeing, we are hearing, we're getting impressions from the outside world and acting upon those impressions. In dreams, we're also having impressions. You see, in your dreams, you're also seeing and hearing and doing things. But where does that come from? Because it's not coming from the senses. Your eyes are closed. You're not seeing anything through your eyes. Your body is laying in bed, so you're not acting with your body. So what is the source of these impressions? That is the smriti, the memory. And that the memory is the doorway into the subconscious. As I said, all the impressions, samskaras, not only from this life, but from all lifetimes that we have ever had in this, from millions and millions and millions of births, they're all stored up down there. And so in our dreams they come out, they spill out. They spill out into the mind. And generally dreaming is a rather, because it's sleep, so it's overshadowed by ignorance. So dreams are generally quite chaotic. Of course, when we're having them, they're real to us. And this should be a lesson about our present experience. You see? Because now we're awake and experiencing this, we take it as real. You see? And when we're sleeping, we're dreaming that I'm flying on the back of an elephant over the ocean. But when we're having that dream, it's real. When we wake up and we think, oh, that's ridiculous. Because we've changed perspective. Now we're in the waking state, that's impossible to fly on the back of an elephant. You see? But when you have that dream, it's real to you. You see? So we have to consider that if we're able to have a different perspective again on what we're experiencing now, we would also see that this is equally like a dream. You see? So anyway, dreaming means the memories coming out of the subconscious into the mind. And yes, it is all rather chaotic. But sometimes what happens is, I mentioned this divya pratyaksha, the intuition. Sometimes that is entering into the dream. And so then the dream can be precognitive. Some people in their dreams, they see the future. And this is not just some story, this has actually been verified. I know of one case myself that has been acknowledged to be true. This was in Chicago in the 1970s, 78 or 79, something like that. There's this big O'Hare Airport. Iskan devotees for so many years distributed books in that airport. So that airport started to get telephone calls. The administration of the airport started to receive telephone calls in the 1970s from a very disturbed man. He was calling them again and again, more than once, for a period of several weeks or months, something like that. And he would call up and say, I keep having a dream, the same dream. A dream of a three-motor jet airliner, like the old Boeing 727. It had two motors under the wings and one on the back. So a plane like that takes off from the O'Hare Airport. And then when it's above the airport, it flips over on its back and falls and explodes. And this is such a clear dream, and I keep having it. And this, you know, his phone calls, they're recorded. So they were recorded on tape. The police went to interview him to see if he's some kind of nut. Or but they found he's a normal person and just keeps having this dream. And it's at the O'Hare Airport, and he was very disturbed. And every time he would have the dream, he would call. So all this is recorded. And then not long after, the accident actually happened.
and the parents of one of my godbrothers were on the plane and killed in that accident. And it was reported in all the news, and this point that this accident was foreseen in a man's dream was also reported. And the police verified it. Yes, we went and interviewed him. It's really true that he had this vision. And, you know, so this is completely verified. So sometimes this happens, that this divya pratyaksha, this divine perception or intuition, heightened intuition, it comes into our dreams. And so therefore Prabhupada told us that if one has a dream of Krishna, spiritual master, like that, and one should take this seriously, because the Lord and His pure devotee, they can and do reveal themselves in our dreams at night, and we can receive instructions in this way. Of course, one should endeavor to get them verified, to understand them properly by consulting with sadhu. But this is definitely a factual manifestation of consciousness. So this is covering the thinking side of the mind. And bhakti yoga. When we engage in bhakti yoga brings to this thinking side of our mind viveka, right discrimination, being able to tell right from wrong, and arjavam, integrity or honesty. This is the contribution of bhakti yoga to our thought life. And then we want to speak now of the affective or emotional side of the mind, which I told you rules. Our emotions rule our thoughts. It's not the other way around. You see? It's not that there are super rational people who completely organize all their emotions by their intellect. No. It doesn't happen. Even very intellectual people, the ideas that they have, the